Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the special meeting of the Historic Preservation Board, July 31st, 2020. We hope you all are well and are persevering. And with that, we will start our special meeting. Good morning, Debbie.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. This is our July 31st meeting, which is a carryover for the applications that were not heard on the July 14th meeting. For anyone who is listening, we will not be hearing any new applications today, just those applications that were not heard on the July 14th agenda. I know the first assistant city attorney is with us, and he has some announcements to make. And after that, I believe if we want to go through attendance right now, we have 5 board members currently present, which is a quorum. But however, 5 affirmative votes are required for any application today that includes demolition or a variance. So all the applicants are aware we currently have 5 board members with Mr. Klein and Mr. Lopez absent. Nick, would you like to give the announcements?
Sure. Thank you, Debbie, and good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Just a few quick announcements. Today's virtual meeting of the Historic Preservation Board has been scheduled pursuant to Executive Order 20-69 of the Florida Governor, which suspends any Florida statute that requires a quorum to be present in person or requires a local government body to meet at a specific place, and permits local government bodies to use communications media technology like Zoom to hold their meetings. In order to participate in today's meeting, members of the public can dial 1-888-475-4499 and use the webinar ID, which is 831-6428-5734. Or they can log into the Zoom app and enter the webinar ID, which again is 831-6428-5734. Members of the public wishing to speak on an item must click the raise hand icon if they're using the Zoom app, or press *9 on their phones to raise their hand. Members of the public who do not have access to a computer and wish to provide testimony and or submit evidence in support of or opposition to an item on today's agenda may appear in person at the Miami Beach Convention Center at 1901 Convention Center Drive through the Washington Avenue entrance in Art Deco Room 229, at which location access to a computer will be provided. On each quasi-judicial application today, I'll swear in each presenter and member of the public who wishes to speak. I'll also be keeping time at today's meeting. Applicants will have 10 minutes each to give their presentations, and members of the public will have 2 minutes each. Lastly, I'd like to read the city's notice regarding lobbyist registration. If you're appearing on behalf of a business, a corporation, or another person, you need to register as a lobbyist with the city clerk's office. If you haven't registered yet, you should register before you speak to the board. You don't have to register as a lobbyist if you're speaking only on behalf of yourself and not any other party, or if you're testifying as an expert witness providing only scientific, technical, or other specialized information or testimony in this public meeting, or if you're appearing as a representative of a neighborhood association without any compensation or reimbursement for your appearance to express support of or opposition to any item. Expert witnesses and representatives of neighborhood associations shall, prior to appearing, disclose in writing to the city clerk their name, address, and the principal on whose behalf they're communicating. If you're an architect, attorney, or employee representing an applicant or an objector, you must register as a lobbyist. These rules apply whether you're appearing in favor of or against an item, or encouraging or arguing against its passage, defeat, modification, or continuance. And before we get to the agenda, I'd just like to swear in members of staff who will be testifying the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
Okay, thank you. That's all for me.
Debbie?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. One more quick announcement. We will be holding an August meeting this year. Typically that month is a recess for the board. However, in order to catch up on the backlog of applications due to the COVID-19 crisis, we will be holding a meeting on August 11th, and that will begin at 9 a.m. And we are currently anticipating the same Zoom type format and the convention center available to members of the public. I will keep you posted if any of that changes. The plans and staff recommendations for that August 11th meeting will be delivered to the board members today. So I wanted to update you with on that. And that information is all posted online as well. We do have the first item is the approval of the July 14th minutes. So if I had a motion for that, we could get that taken care of. Do we have a motion for the approval of the July 14th, 2020 minutes?
I'll move it.
Okay, moved by Mr. Litt. Do I have a second?
A second.
Second by Mr. Pascal. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that passes. We also have two requests for continuances this morning. So let me read those into the record. The first application requesting a continuance is HPB file 19-0364. This is 1234 and 1260 Washington Avenue. The applicant is requesting a continuance to the August 11th meeting. Staff has no objection to this. I think we could hear from the applicant if they wish to speak and then open it up to the public. Is the applicant for 1234 and 1260 Washington Avenue wishing to speak? Okay, I don't hear anything from the applicant, Mr. Chair, so maybe we could open it up to the public.
Okay. Is there any public comment on this issue?
And while we're waiting for the public, do any board members have any disclosures to make on this application? No. Debbie, is the applicant trying to connect? I mean, do you think we...
I don't know. So I think we could... I don't see any members of the public. I think we could close the public hearing and call the vote.
Okay. All those in favor?
Do we
would need a motion.
I'll make a motion to continue it to, which was the meeting, Debbie?
August 11th.
August to the August 11th meeting.
You need a second?
A second.
Okay. All those in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? So moved. Thank you, Debbie.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. The last request for continuance this morning is HPV file 20-0380. This is 550 Washington Avenue. Again, the applicant is requesting a continuance to the August 11th meeting, and staff has no objection to this request. Is the applicant here and wish to address the board?
Good morning. This is Greg Fontella with Burke Howard L. Fernandez Larkin and Tappanis. Offices at 200 South Biscayne Boulevard. Requesting a continuance to the August 11th hearing just for better schedule coordination. So if there's any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you. Thank you, Greg. Are there any questions? Okay, hearing none. Hello, Debbie?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. Hearing none. Is there a motion?
No, correct.
Is there a motion?
Yeah, I'll move to continue the item.
Okay. A second?
A second.
Okay. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. So moved. Thank you, Debbie.
You're welcome, Mr. Chair. We can move on to the scheduled applications today. And the first series of applications are relative to the installation of the distributed antenna system pole installations. We have 5 of those on the agenda this morning, so I will read each of those into the record. I believe Mr. Heisenbottle and Mr. Martos are here to give a presentation after I introduce the items. The first application is HPB 20-0392. This is for the installation of a distributed antenna system at approximately 213 67th Street. Second application, HPB 20-0393, for the installation of the antenna system at approximately 210 19th Street. HPB file 0394 for the installation of the antenna at approximately 109 9th Street. HPB file 20-0396, and that is for the installation of the antenna at approximately 110 7th Street. And the final application is HPB 20-0397 for the installation of the antenna at approximately 137 73rd Street. So these five applications are somewhat of a mix in terms of examples of ones the board has approved before. Typically, we see most of the one-for-one light pole replacements, which means the city street light poles, the tall light poles with the cobra head light fixture, are removed and replaced. There are times throughout the city that the board has seen applications for a new pole without a light and also FPNL attachment type poles. So these are all examples of poles that the board has seen before and has approved. I know we do have some new board members, so I'm just going to go through them very briefly. The pole proposed to be introduced at 67th Street and Collins, that is an FPNL attachment. So the applicant is proposing to attach a small piece of equipment on the existing FPNL pole and then introduce a separate meter pole. FPNL does not permit the installation of the meter pole on their power poles, so the meter pole would be adjacent to the FPNL pole. The application on 19th Street, which is right at Collins and 19th Street, is currently proposed as a single standalone pole without a light. Staff is supportive of this application, but we would request that the applicant work with Public Works to see if we possibly need a light in this location, and if we do, to have a light actually installed on the new antenna pole consistent with the city's lighting standards. The 109 9th Street is a new pole with a street light. So there is not a swap here, but they are proposing to introduce a street light on this pole. The 110 7th Street is a one-for-one replacement and shifting that existing light pole location to the east. This one I did receive public comment on, and it was in support of the application. And the final application is, again, going back to the FPNL poles. This is within within the city right-of-way, but it's an FPNL pole attachment, and they are proposing the standalone adjacent meter. So staff is supportive of all of these applications, subject to the conditions we have outlined in our draft orders. Thank you.
Thank you, Debbie. Are these to be taken individually as motions, or do you want to?
I know the applicant is here to present. I think we can, Nick, correct me if I'm wrong. Can the board make one motion for all of them, or does it need to be separate?
I think, no, the board can make one motion. I think, Debbie, I think we called them together, right?
Yes.
So that's fine. So we can give the applicant time to present them all, and then when we open to the public can comment on any of the items. So before the applicant begins, I'd just like to swear in any members of the team who will be testifying. So please state on the record whether you swear or affirm tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
All right, thank you. You have 10 minutes.
Thank you very much, Nick, and thank you, Debbie, for that great presentation. For the record, my name is Edward Martos, office is at 2525 Ponce de Leon Boulevard. Board members, it's nice to see you, if only virtually. the key thing I wanted to highlight from Debbie's excellent presentation was that she's recommending approval for all of our sites. She did have one condition, a request that we add a light fixture if Public Works thinks it's appropriate, and we are happy to accept that condition and all the standard conditions as well. So with no further ado, I'll turn it over to Richard so he can run you through our slides.
And for the record, my name is Richard Heisenbaugh, with offices at 2199 Ponce de Leon Boulevard in Coral Gables. And if staff can go ahead and bring up our first slide, HPB 20-0393. There we go. This is a standalone. Go ahead and move it to the next slide. It is located at 19th Street and Collins Avenue. Next slide, please. Are we having some trouble moving those slides? There we go. Where that is at the end of 19th Street. Go ahead to the next one. And this is a situation where, once again, we cannot locate on Collins, so we have to locate an independent pole, a standalone pole, as we call it, just around the corner. We've done that back on the sidewalk. Go to the next slide.
I'm on a Zoom, so I can't talk to you. Lots of them.
And there we go. Just trying to move that pole as far back as we possibly can.
Did you just
go on to the next one? And the next one is HPB 20-0394 at the corner of 109 9th Street. And that is just off Ocean. Go ahead to the next site plan slide so everybody can see where it is. Again, as you can see with the little pin, just off Ocean. This is also a standalone. Go ahead. Next slide. And next slide again. This is the case where there we go. And Ed, is this the one that we have the motion for the to add light if Public Works requires? And let's go to the next one then. HPB 20-0396, 110 7th Street. This is a replacement and relocation from a sidewalk to a planting bed. Go ahead to the next one. It'll make more sense. You see the existing light pole on the right-hand side. Usually we do those as direct replacement, but in this case, we're going to also relocate the pole to what we deem to be a better location inside the planting bed. Go to the next one. We'll see it from a profile. Yeah. So it actually enhances that situation. Go ahead to the next one, HPB 20-0392. This is 213 67th Street, just off Harding Avenue. Go ahead to the next one. And this is what I've called kind of collating micro wireless, where we have to share an FPNL pole and rather than placing a new pole. And what you want to be aware of here is that we do have to have the standalone meter, which you see on the right hand side, the electric meter, separate from the FPNL pole. So. Now, go ahead to the next one. Just shows you another view, another angle of the same one. Proceed to the next one, HPB 20-0397. Next. This is at 73rd off Collins. Again, this is a micro wireless situation where we're co-locating on an FPNL pole. And we have to set up the separate meter, and we try to do that as neatly and as nicely as we can. Next. That's just another view. And that should wrap it up. That was 20-0397. I think that's it.
Okay, thank you. Board, thank you, Richard.
Board, we're available for any questions you may have.
Does anyone have any questions?
Do.
Mr. Chair, just before we do anything else, do any board members have any disclosures on these files? Okay, I see no disclosures. And would you like to open to the public, or do you want to?
Sure. Sure. Let's open to the public. Comment.
I don't see any members of the public wishing to comment at this time, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you. So public comment is closed. Let's move to board. Board questions or comments. Nancy? Can't hear you, Nancy, dear.
Unmute. All right. I pressed unmute. Do you hear me now?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, good. All right. I have no questions.
Okay. Thank you very much. It's lovely to see you today. Kirk?
Yeah, I do have questions. I want a little bit of clarification, if that's possible. I wanted to ask. So, for instance, on the 67th and 73rd Street locations, I want to get a little clearer understanding of these meters and what the criteria is for placement, because on those two, I wonder why, for instance, on 67th Street, the pole is going in front of the Walgreens versus across the drive where it would be in a parking lot versus up against I'm not sure. Debbie, is that Walgreens is contributing? I would guess, right? That's the former Rascal House or Wolfie's. And same question on 73rd, because again, we're placing the meter adjacent to Manolo, which is the beginning of that whole commercial corridor, whereas across the street on the south side, again, we have a parking lot, which will subsequently be a parking garage structure, not an ensemble of historic buildings. So I wanted to ask for a little bit of clarification about positioning of those meter poles.
Can we ask staff to go back to the slides of...
Mr. Hasenbuttel, if I could just answer one of Kirk's questions, at least. Kirk, so the parking lot... I don't think that the FPNL pole that's on the parking lot side is located within the right of way. So I'm not sure if they could swap it to that side. The meter, the design of the meter is consistent with the previous meters. It's that stealth design meter, so it's not an exposed piece of equipment. It's actually shrouded with the metal material. But I think if we go to the parking lot, that FPNL pole is actually outside the right of way.
And I can confirm, I'm looking at the survey, it is in your packets, but I'm looking at the survey now, the parking lot itself, including that grassy area behind where the meter's proposed, is not right of way. And so that's one of our constraints.
Okay. So, I mean, can you clarify the connection between the pole, the FPNL pole, and the meter? Is there like a range that they have to be within?
There is a range. The farther range, I believe, is 10 feet. One of our engineers should be on as part of the public comment. Maybe we can have them raise their hand and confirm that for us. But I believe it's about approximately 10 feet of a maximum distance that we have from the pole. And so the one here that you've got is already at 7.47 feet.
I understand. Thanks for the clarification.
Debbie, I have a question directly related to what Kirk asked, so I'd like to interrupt. I don't understand that your meter looks to me like it's taking up a parking space. And a car, if car parked there, would it be able to open its door, or is it taking? Is it?
Are you? I assume, Mr. Finglas, you're asking about the one by Manolo. Right. That one is, it's hard to see, but it's because there's a shadow of a car in the photograph. But that area of the curb is marked in yellow, which is to say no parking is allowed there.
Well, I may have missed something. Why can't your meter be directly next to the pole?
FPL doesn't allow them directly next to the pole. We actually have like a range. I don't know. Again, if our engineer's on, we can have them raise their hand, but we cannot be too close to the pole either. The reason we located it here in this instance was to keep it between the windows. You can see on the Manolo, if you're looking at the image of the Manolo restaurant there, you'll see that we placed the pedestal between the two window frames. So, okay. Approximately where there's a column there. And you know, our thinking was that's a little less in the way.
Okay. I know you have requirements, but it makes no sense to me that the meter can't be. We're continuing to clutter up the street, as far as I can see, for very little reason. It would be much nicer if the meter could be literally at the pole, but if it can't, it can't.
They're not letting us do that, Jack. We don't disagree with you. We try to attach it to the pole, but they won't allow that.
Okay.
FPL controls these pole, Mr. Finglas, and I think their rationale, and since we're asking to get onto their pole, I think their rationale is we want to maintain the thing and we don't want to have to deal with your pedestal every time we come in for maintenance or anything like that. If we were flush up against the pole, that issue would come up again and again for FPL.
Okay, thank you. And that's a good explanation. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Kirk. Do you have anything else?
No, I was done. Thank you.
Okay. Max, do you have anything?
Thank you. As we're talking about co-location, and to the extent that Crown Castle is going to have more of these coming up throughout the city, I can see as you're working with Public Works and Environment and Sustainability, I'd encourage you to consider also whether, in addition to lights, there are opportunities for environmental monitoring. If Environment and Sustainability is looking for air quality or local temperature sensors for urban heat island effect, if there are any opportunities for co-location there, try to get some multiple objectives without adding more clutter.
We are happy to discuss that with them. We'd have to see what the equipment entails. I really don't know. It's a technical question, but we're very open to that. So we'd be happy to speak to them.
Okay. Thank you.
That's all I have.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Max. I think Scott is next.
Yeah, I had a question. Debbie, I know on any normal project, you know, when it's all done, planning goes out to inspect the project to make sure it's built according to plan. When these projects are complete, do you go out to these sites and look at them and check things out?
That's a great question. These are a little bit different than the traditional building permit. They're required to get a right-of-way permit, which is really solely through our public works department. They're also required to get electrical permits. So we're not required in the inspection log. Planning department is not required. However, we do go out and look at most of them just to make sure that they're consistent with the board. We also work very closely with public works during the permitting process to make sure where they're approving it is the location that the board had requested it be located in. So while we're not, you know, in the formal inspection queue, we do go out and look at these. And especially, you know, we often get public comment after the fact, after these are installed. And, you know, every opportunity when that happens, we go back and confirm that everything was done in accordance with what the board had approved.
Yeah, and the reason I bring it up, and I brought this up before, it's about putting the streetscape, the sidewalk, any plantings, whatever, back to the, you know, condition it was in before the construction started, at least same condition or better. And the reason I bring it up now is, you know, I'm right across the street from me. I've been watching one of the poles go in, and, you know, every day it seems like they'll go out there and dig up another section of the sidewalk, dig a hole here or there. And And, you know, I know right now it's temporary. They'll put the asphalt in. But there's so much being done. And this street here was just redone a little while ago, about a year ago, some of the sidewalks here. So, you know, between that and all the markings on the street, I just wish there was a better way to really maybe the planning department could look, instead of just Public Works, to make sure everything is back to normal and you know, all the requirements are followed in terms of, you know, cleaning the markings off the street and sidewalks and plantings and the like. So it's just, again, when you see this is going on, when I'm watching it every day, you start thinking about these things some more. So I know I mentioned this once before, but I wanted to bring it up again.
That's a great point, Scott, and we will make sure, and, you know, in conjunction with the city's Public Works Department, that the sidewalks or any landscape areas are repaired in the same, if not better, condition than prior to the installation. Very good point. Thank you.
And Crown Castle's committed to doing so, Mr. Needleman. So you have that commitment from us.
Thank you, Scott. Those are very, very good comments. And moving right along, I thought there was no public comment except one in support. Debbie?
Yes, I had received an email to support the it was just for one of them. It was Tom Glassy had emailed a letter of support for the 7th Street location, the Ocean Drive and 7th Street location. That is the only thing I received, and I don't see any members of the public wishing to comment at this time.
Okay, seeing none, public comment is closed. Any further board discussion? Nancy?
Are you getting ready to vote? Because I want to make a comment with my vote.
You want your comment?
You want a comment?
Yes, ma'am.
I am going to oppose this and any others that come. I am for years tired of FDOT's lack of consideration for the residents of any of the cities in their trust. And until they come into today's world, I am going to oppose what they're trying to do. I know what everybody's trying to do here, but I'm opposed to it because they are always giving people grief in everything that they are in charge of. So that's my vote.
Thank you. Thank you, Nancy. That's
Mr. Chair, just to clarify, Nancy, in this particular set of five, none of these are actually, and we've seen those before, but none of the current ones we're looking at today are located within the FDOT right of way.
Correct.
But they're still.
Just wanted to clarify.
Are they still FDOT projects? Yes.
No, these are all located within the city right of way. They're private projects requested by Crown Castle for these cellular antenna poles. But none of these are on FDOT right of way.
Okay, then I will take back that, and I will continue to watch when FDOT's projects come back.
And very good. Yeah, very good. Thank you, Nancy. I think we could have, do we have a motion? And we would be, the motion could be for all five of them. So that would be HPV file 020392, 0393, 0394, 0396, and 0397.
We have a motion.
I think we have 0392 also, Deb. Did you catch that?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a motion to approve these antenna?
I'll make the motion to approve the five.
Vice Chairman Scott makes a motion. Is there a second? Oh, come on.
I'll second.
There's no second?
I'll second.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Max. Okay. All those in favor?
Mr. Chair, we're going to do a roll call for these applications, just so it's clear. It's a little difficult on Zoom sometimes to hear all the different members. So roll call, Mr. Finglas.
Yes.
Mr. Klein is absent. Ms. Liebman.
Yes, for today.
Mr. Litt.
Yes.
Mr. Lopez is absent. Mr. Needleman.
Yes.
Mr. Pascal.
It's muted.
Yes. Sorry. Yes.
Thank you. That motion passes. Thank board you.
Board members, thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
And thank you very much for giving up your time today to finish out these other items.
We appreciate it.
Thank you, Richard.
Really appreciate it. Have a great day, everybody. Be safe.
Kent has filed a request for an after-the-fact certificate of appropriateness for the installation of a canopy structure at the ground level. As noted in your staff report, in 2018, the property owner did appear before the board requesting approval of two canopy structures, one within the existing courtyard of the Casa Casarina contributing building. And they had also presented a project which would introduce a very large canopy structure within that pool deck area on the corner of Ocean Drive and 11th Street. At that meeting, the board did approve the canopy structure for the interior canopy. And again, that was in the interior of the contributing building and continued the large canopy structure in the courtyard. After that meeting, I believe it was sometime in November of 2018, the property owner did install a much reduced canopy structure in that courtyard area. The canopy that the board was uncomfortable with that was presented in April of 2018, you know, was much taller and larger all around. In evaluating this existing canopy, staff has had the opportunity to go out to the site on multiple occasions. We did inspect the area in terms of the method of installation and the visibility from Ocean Drive. It's a corner property, so, you know, the visibility is a concern. And we did kind of walk around even further to the east than is required by the line of sight. And it, as you can see in the image that we provided you in your staff recommendation, It is not visible at all. Even if you get very close to the property and peer into the property, it is a very minimal impact in that courtyard area. There was no demolition associated with the introduction of this canopy. Staff does not believe it has any adverse impact on the historic district or the contributing property, and we are recommending approval. I believe the applicant is here to give a brief presentation. Mr. Robbins, are you on?
Yes, I am.
And before we hear from the applicant, I'd just like to swear in any members of the applicant's team who will be providing testimony. So please state on the record whether you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
Thank you. You have 10 minutes.
I just need a couple of minutes. My name is Ken Harrison Robbins, and I represent the owner of Casa Casarina. The staff has done an excellent job of presentation. This is just a freestanding canopy, unattached not only to any building, but also unattached to the ground. It actually floats on the ground on heavy plates. It can be disassembled at any time for hurricanes or other items. It's essentially a temporary structure. In every sense of the term, it can be disassembled in a matter of hours. We have here, would you go to page 2 of the slide, please? Page 2. Okay, would you go to the next page? Thank you. As you can see, it's right around the pool area in the non-historic part of the site. And enables members and guests of the Casa Casuarina to enjoy the premises and avoid the heavy sunlight on summer days and summer afternoons, and in Florida, also winter days. I have with us Wilfredo Agudo, our architect, and he's prepared to finish the presentation. Wilfredo?
I don't think we actually have Wilfredo on this actual meeting. Wilfredo, if you're in the attendance, please hit the raise your hand icon so you can be quickly identified. That's Wilfredo, correct, Kent?
Yes, Wilfredo, I'll do that.
I don't see him actually on this meeting. Just give me one second. There's one person with their hand up. Let me just verify if it's them. Good morning. Good morning. Is this Wilfredo?
No, this is David McKinney.
Okay, thank you. Just give me one moment. We don't have Wilfredo in here, Kent.
Okay, well, I can jump in and make the presentation. Would you go to page 3? I need to be sworn in now since I'm going to be serving as a witness. Swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, but nothing but the truth, so help me God.
Thank you. You're already under oath, but thank you.
Right. Thank you. This is the east elevation of the site. As you can see, the structural elements are in the dark enclosed areas on the left side. It's a very minimal structure as compared to the actual structure of the Casa Casuarina. Would you go to slide 2? Next slide. As you can see from the next slide, please. As you can see from all these photographs that I've shown you, none of the canopy is not visible from either the east side or here, the south side. Would you go to the next slide, please? As you can see, we have done a line of sight analysis of the Casa Casuarina. You can see where the canopy is demonstrated on the diagram above as to its location. It's not visible or in line of sight from across the street, across Ocean Drive. And you can see from the view from Ocean Drive, it's not visible. Next slide. Once again, we need another sight line analysis from 11th Street. You can see, once again, it would not be visible in the line of sight. Likewise, if you look at the photograph from 11th Street, it's not visible. Next slide. This is the third line of sight analysis from Caddy Corner from across the street of 11th and Ocean Drive. And you can see a line of sight it would not be visible or within the line of sight or obstruct the line of sight of the building. If you view it from 11th Street, you see the photograph, you can't see the canopy. Essentially, the canopy is invisible to the public from outside the premises. Next slide. You can see it's a minimal structure. You'd earlier seen the picture of it from the north looking south. The next, the photograph on the left is looking from the west to east. And with the canopy structure open. And then there's another view looking from the west towards the southeast. Once again, minimal impact. Next slide. Now this is showing a location on the site. On the left side, you can see how the foundation of the structure is essentially steel plates. They're placed on top of the existing soil, does not penetrate the soil, and can be easily removed at any time. Next slide. Once again, here's a isometric of the structural design of the canopy. Once again, you can see how simply designed it is. and how minimally impacting it is on the actual physical premises. And that's the completion of my presentation. Do you have any questions?
Yes, I have a few questions, Kent. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi. Welcome. Thank you for your presentation. It was very, very well done. I am greatly perplexed by this project, and I have a problem with it. And when it came to us originally, it is my understanding that it was not allowable at the time, but it was built. After it was built, about a month or so after it was built, I had the pleasure of having dinner at the restaurant there outside. And I was greatly disturbed because it was a very, very beautiful, warm night, no threat of rain. And the canopy itself was closed. And I was wondering why it was closed, and I called the maitre d' over, and I asked him why is this cover closed on such a nice night? And he said, "It's always closed. We're told never to open it." And that really disturbed me. Number one, and number two, now I notice that there are electric fans, and wired in your structure. And when you say it can be easily taken down, well, perhaps it can. But when you have wiring like that all over the structure, I think that makes it a little bit more complicated than being easily removed at will if there's a storm or something coming. But what really disturbed me was that your staff there at the time said it would never be open. That to me is creating basically a permanent structure. And I never liked when something comes to us as a fait accompli. And that's what this is. I find it hard to trust the owner's intention with this, since it was not allowable, as I understand from the staff at the time this was originally brought up. And now I don't understand why it's coming back at this point, because we already went through this once. So if you can explain to me why this appears to be permanent, although you say it's not. And that worries me, because I think as a permanent structure, it really detracts from the beauty of the building behind it and the pool area and everything else. It's very rectilinear, very severe. And it just, to me, does not add anything except economic opportunity for the owner to put more people in the dining area. Sorry to take so long, but I'm greatly perplexed by the rationale for all this. Thank you.
Well, Jack, I'm not sure if we want to, before we hear from Ken, if we want to take public comment.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. So before we open to the public, do any board members have any disclosures to make on this application?
No.
Okay. Mr. Chair, would you like to open to the public?
Sure. Sorry.
That's all right. So each member of the public has 2 minutes to speak. I see Mr. McKinney is up first. So, Mr. McKinney, please state on the record whether you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
Thank you.
I'm David McKinney, and I'm representing the Miami Design Preservation League. I live at 1020 Meridian Avenue, apartment 416, Miami Beach. The Preservation League opposes the application. We think that the canopy basically destroys the whole appearance of the courtyard in terms of its structure. There does look like a temporary structure. It almost looks like scaffolding. And that we see this area really as one of the public spaces that are protected by the preservation statute. If we also have a concern that this is an after-the-fact application, and if we do worry about their signal it sends to other organizations that they can do something and then come to the board afterwards. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David, for your insight. Anyone else? From public comment? Okay. Hearing none, we close the public comment. And
May I respond?
Oh, sure. Sorry.
Yeah, sure. I understand the concern you have, but let's look at, I was not part of the process previously, but I also was very concerned when I was brought into this matter as to why this was done and no permission was obtained prior to the time. And the explanation given to me, I found to be, convinced me that there was a reasonable explanation. The original application proposed a canopy that was actually attached to the buildings. And it was approximately 75% larger in massing and overall surface area than this particular, what's being presented to you today. It was also physically attached and actually affected the existing historic fabric of the site. What was then put down there and what was believed at the time it was designed, it was believed by the principal that at that time, that as long as he did not attach it to the building and did not actually penetrate the ground, it would not be deemed a structure. And under the old code, that would be true. That would not be deemed a structure. Under the new codes, that obviously is a structure and subject to the building code. However, he designed it and designed it so it would not penetrate, believing in good faith that that would not require full permitting. Once he found out about it, and once it was addressed to him that he had to get full permitting, he did promptly apply. I apologize for that and that misunderstanding. However, overall, the intent of this is to have minimal impact. And its impact is not in the historic building at all. The site of where it's located was once where the Riviera Hotel was, which is long gone. And Mr. Versace then built this beautiful pool, but it's not part of the historic context of the building. It's not historic. It can be deemed contributing, but it's certainly not part of the historic context of the building. So therefore, it was not unreasonable for them to seek an additional structure in there that would be appropriate and help them serve their guests. Remember, the people outside on many, many days, people cannot withstand that sun. Almost every place where people have outside dining, they have canopy structures over them, usually smaller umbrellas. However, this canopy is larger, but it affords people the type of protection from the sun, which is reasonable. And now in this day of COVID, it would seem that you want to encourage outside dining. In fact, inside dining isn't even permitted in most places. So under the times and under the circumstances, it seems like it's the appropriate remedy. I think that it is unfortunate there was a misunderstanding by the manager as to what he could and could not do. But as you can see, and we can go back to the structure itself, it is a structure that can be removed. It's not penetrating, and it's an unusual structure that hasn't been used before. And in fact, should be the way canopies and other structures are put on the property so they can be readily removed to be able to restore it back to the original design. As far as operations are concerned, I am sure that I can convince my clients and it would be acceptable for them to open it up on starry nights and things of that and situations like that, non-rainy days. And I would open the door up to some operation requirements that at night when it's not rain, if it's not raining, they have to open it up and increase the visibility to the sky. But I emphasize it does not impact the public areas of the project. It does not impact this line of sight. It complies with all the codes, all the specific codes under the historic preservation regulations. And I do not know, and the staff has not recognized any violation of any regulation as it's placed there now. And in fact, the staff recommends it. Thank you.
Thank you, Kent. Let's see. We've had public comment. Moving on, to, we're going to close public comment and go to board discussion. Let's start with Scott.
Yeah, I too, Jack, share some of your same concerns. When I look at the, you know, the background, they came to us April 18th. And regardless, at the time they withdrew the application for the portion over the pool. But December of that year, it had already been installed. So I assume they got the permit for the parts that were approved. By the time they did that, you know, a few months later, maybe it seems, and then through construction, it seems as if even though they withdrew it, they never had any intention of not putting it over the pool area at all. It seems like they just withdrew it and they just went ahead and did it anyway. I think that's obvious. My question for staff is, I mean, I didn't look at the April 18th hearing, but I'm wondering if you recall, did they present it at all? Did they sort of show it there? And then we gave negative comments and then they decided, okay, we won't. Did they say, okay, we'll withdraw that. We won't do that. Is that okay. What happened?
Yes. However, let me just point out, and staff was not supportive of the canopy that came before you in 2018. This structure is significantly reduced in size. So the currently installed structure is 28.6 by 55.6, and it is 15 feet tall. The one that was presented in 2018 was 43 feet by 70 feet and nearly 28 feet tall. So they did install the current one without any approvals from the city. They received a violation. Staff had actually went out there. We had several meetings with the property owner. Mr. Robbins was not involved at that time. We, as staff, expressed our serious concerns about the introduction of a canopy without any types of permits or approvals. We did speak about, you know, the fact that they did go to the board and the board was not supportive of the previous design. However, when we reviewed the current canopy, that was not something that we took into consideration, whether they had bad behavior. They got a violation. They have been in front of the special master, the planning department. We have attended those special master hearings to speak on behalf of the board that they should not have installed something without board approval. We have, you know, the penalty that is provided for in the city code is in the fee schedule. So as an after the fact application, they are charged triple fee and the applicant agreed and paid for that. There are no other provisions that we have in terms of a penalty for an after the fact application. All C of A applications, whether after the fact or not, are subject to the same certificate of appropriateness criteria. We evaluated this in accordance with the criteria. We do not find that it has any adverse impact on the district and are supportive of the current design. We're not happy that it's an after the fact. And we have advised the property owner of that. So that's all I have to add, Scott. The canopy that was installed is dramatically different in a significant reduction in scale than the one that was presented to the board.
And you had answered my next question, which was going to be, is this any different from the one that was proposed before? Obviously, you know, it is. And I think we're all not happy with the after the fact. But, you know, looking at this, obviously, whatever fees and whatever hoops they had to jump through to get it, they're going to do. They're going to pay. I think it's, you know, like you said, it doesn't meet all the criteria. So, I mean, I'm okay with approving it today. because the staff sees that with everything that was talked about, obviously it's much smaller than what it was. Can't see it from the street. I understand Jack's concerns about it. They said it's always going to be closed. I don't know how much we can have an effect or govern how they do that. Maybe we could just ask for good faith from the applicant that they'll try to keep it open as much as possible. But because it is much different, much smaller, much less noticeable than what was provided for before, I'm okay with it. Although, the way they went about doing it is I just think they were just completely ignored. Well, I don't want to say they completely ignored what we had to say, because we said we didn't like it and they didn't put in what they initially proposed. They put in something much smaller. But it's just the process they ignored, and that's not good. But they'll pay whatever fines they need to pay. But like I said, I'm okay with approving it today as it's designed.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Scott. Very, very insightful, and we appreciate it. Next, Kirk.
Yeah, hi. I agree with Steph's input, their feelings with regard to it being less visible. I agree with you, Jack, on the after the fact, and with Scott as well. It's concerning. It's frustrating. I'm also looking at the structure, and I have questions too, since there is no since it's not really anchored in the soil. To me, it really has the look of temporary structure, and it feels like, by approving it, we are, approving a temporary structure, what looks like a temporary structure, to remain permanently. And I also have questions if the structure looks like the pieces are welded together, and also, we have a hurricane that's planned to come our way in the next couple of days. And is it safe?
Kirk, we did meet with the building department regarding the structure. They also went out to the site. They issued a building violation. Mr. Avalos did issue a building violation for the structure. It does require a building permit in terms of the connection to the ground. So it's not quite floating. There is a sleeve that goes into the ground to support the posts of the structure. And then the plate is on top of that. So it can be basically pulled in and pulled out. It's not something that's so temporary that I could go right now with my bare hands and just rip it out of the ground. It takes some effort, because you have to remove the plate and then lift it out of the sleeve that it's in. Structural details were presented to the building official, and they did agree. I believe the building department has already approved that permit for the installation details. The planning department has not, so it has not been issued, because we are requiring board approval prior to the planning department signing off on that permit. But we did, that was part of our analysis when we looked at this, and we did work in conjunction with the building department.
So if a hurricane were, directed our way, is the idea that this structure would withstand a hurricane and not pose a hazard to coming dislodged, or would it be taken down, if you had an imminent threat like that?
Up to a certain extent, it could withstand certain wind loads. I think if it was a major hurricane, the building department would advise the removal. And again, it's not a 30-second removal like an umbrella might be, but it could be removed probably within an hour or so. Now, another thing to notice, to note, is that because it has that retractable fabric, when the fabric is retracted, the wind loads significantly reduce. So these structures are actually more stable than if it was a permanent awning that didn't have that retractable feature. The fabric is required to retract when the wind speed increases. So all of these retractable fixtures have monitors. So when the wind gets to a certain extent, and I think it's 30 miles per hour, that fabric retracts. If it didn't retract, you're right, it would not meet the wind load requirements. But the retractable fabric helps the structural stability of it. So we did kind of look through all of that. And I would, you know, any more technical questions would want the building department to chime in. But at this point, I think the city is confident that it will be safe as currently designed.
Okay. Just a couple of more comments. And in terms of the courtyard, I mean, obviously, it does not complement the historic building. It does not complement the historic structure, in my opinion. It is less obtrusive in terms of the sizing. I also want to state, because I keep hearing over and over again that this is about shade. And, you know, I have to ask myself, I mean, you know, trees would complement the structure and fit in and not stand out like a sore thumb. And if the real intent here was to have, you know, a semi-permanent, temporary, permanent, whatever you want to call it, a structure to provide shade, why not explore, you know, shade trees and umbrellas like everyone else does? And my last question is a technical one, because I'm not enthusiastic about this for the reasons I've stated. And if it is the case that this structure could be disassembled and would be if the city and the historic district were under some sort of a weather threat, is there a possibility that, as we do with temporary structures, that there could be, a time limit on this, that maybe we allow it and see how it goes, but leave it subject to coming back to the board? I don't see what would be lost if we did that. Maybe they leave it open and somehow, you know, it ends up being a success and not undermining the allure of that building. That's my last technical question, is as a middle ground, is there a possibility that maybe we do a temporary approval for this structure and have it come back to the board after a reasonable period of time to reassess if we feel it's been, has undermined the quality of the district and the building or not?
Thank you very much, Kirk. Those are very, very fine comments. I'd like to add my comments now, as opposed to the end, if I might. I want to take on the mantle of John Stewart, our former very illustrious board member from representing FIU. And he never voted against anything, really. He came up with alternatives or suggestions to make something better. And I think this is an excellent example of an owner or a manager who has not thought completely through the alternatives that exist to give them a shaded outdoor dining, but not build a temporary / permanent metal structure. I remember very clearly this discussion at our meeting 2 years ago. We brought up the idea of an open-sided tent structure that would give shade, but would allow air to go through all around the structure, just like this metal one does. I also would question the need for this. I know an owner has a right to do what he wants, and I want to make sure that the restaurant stays viable and economically feasible. However, I also have had the pleasure, or did have the pleasure, of dining in the historic shell dining room when it was open several years ago. And then they had the restaurant, as I remember, without any outdoor dining by the pool at all, except cocktails. When it rains, when there's wind blowing from the ocean, which is almost always the case, I don't see how this structure with no sides of any type or no rain screens could protect people under it from getting drenched by the gusts of wind with the rain. They probably would have to move into the center of the tent or move inside the building. I think that the owner is short-sighted by not having the shell room restaurant open and having dining tables around the courtyard inside the hotel under the balconies, as it were, or walkways. There are many other ways of having the same number of tables and the same economic benefit without putting this semi-permanent white rectilinear structure in the courtyard, which, contrary to Mr. Robbins, I believe is very historic, even though it may not be original to the period of the building, because it has become such through time. And I'm struggling, as Kirk has said in the past, with this, because I don't want to penalize an owner who's trying to have a business. I think that's not our role. Our role is to encourage preservation and economic development. But on the other hand, I think it's very important that we try to protect the integrity of outdoor spaces and look at alternatives, like Kirk rightly said, about trees and canopy. And we're supposed to be blue-green with Max as our member for blue-green items. And having beautiful trees there, to shade trees, would certainly be better for the environment than this white rectilinear structure. So I really, really am struggling. I don't want to penalize the owner, and I don't want to vote against this, because in today's board members, in theory, it only takes one member to say no. I really don't want to be that member. I'm trying to be positive, but I also have to look out for the alternatives that we did discuss before, with a tent that could be taken down much easier than this structure that they're proposing. And I think they could arrive at their same endpoint via a different method that wouldn't do damage to the historic fabric of the property. Thank you. Max?
Thank you. I appreciate the discussion, too, from just getting a sense of the history here and the process concerns. I don't really have much to add. I think everyone's comments so far have really covered it. I was going to mention the shade tree option as well. I think that would be, if nothing else, then it should be having an understanding of how that would rank as an alternative, the way the chair sort of propose this as what are the alternatives to the structure as it's being proposed. Nothing really to add other than that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Max. Nancy, we're looking forward to hearing you.
I hope you can hear me.
We can hear you fine.
You can hear me. Okay. First of all, Johnny Versace would turn over in his grave if he saw what was going on with this. I in no way can support it, but the reasons why. First of all, I think that the photos that have been shown to us, they seem to be outside photos, and I think they were intentionally made to not show how this element was going to stick out like a sore thumb in the middle of it. I think that there needs to be, I'd like to know, maybe the applicant can explain who designed such a thing to go over a beautiful structure like this. Was there a designer? Because there are designers who do good designs. If everybody would take a look at the new cover for the 71st Street Community Center, that was done by a designer. It was done sensitively, so it didn't just explode all over the beautiful open space there. So I would suggest that. If the designer or if the applicant would like to share who designed this, I don't know. I can't imagine somebody with good taste and good sense would do this to the Versace mansion itself. We've already heard this once. Yes, they went ahead and did it and weren't supposed to do it. I can overlook that. It's not important. But I think now we need to really look at it for what it is. It's a big metal post sticking out like a sore thumb. It's a tracks from the building. I mean, I can go on about that. The last thing I want to say is that the addition, the Versace addition that took the place of the Riviera Hotel, which was at that time not considered contributing. But I think at this time that project, since it has been there for, I can't even count the years, it shouldn't even be talked about as not something that we should consider. So in any event, I'm very opposed to this.
Thank you very much, Nancy, for your superb comments. Moving right along. Sorry, Kent, would you like to rebut, please? Thank you. We can't hear you.
As everybody probably knows on this board, I've actually been involved personally with historic preservation for nearly 35, 40 years, and in fact, restored multiple buildings myself. So I have a concern even for this project and how it could be appropriate. I think that you've raised a lot of really good issues, and instead of going forward at this point, I'd like to continue this matter and get my client to consider some of the alternatives and see what we can do to perhaps adapt the situation to make it more appropriate. One of the things I do know that's going to be very difficult to do, and that is to put trees on this site where this canopy is, because it's basically mosaics over most of those areas, which would prevent trees from actually being implanted into the ground there. So I don't think trees in that particular area will work. However, I think we should explore alternatives, and perhaps there could be other things we can do in combination with this mechanism to make it more pleasing to members of this board. So at this time, I request that this matter be continued and for us to sit down, be able to sit down with staff and MDPL and discuss alternatives.
Thank you very, very much for that. Greatly appreciated. Thank you. Should we have a motion to continue?
A move to continue it. What date are we looking to continue it to?
I would recommend September 8th at the earliest.
So I move to continue the item to September 8th.
Is there a second?
I'll second it, and I do have just one quick question for staff. There's no, well, so how many affirmative votes with this application? Is it four or five?
This one, because there's no demolition, would require four affirmative votes to approve. Okay. So we have a motion and a second. I will do the roll call. So we have Mr. Pascal.
Yes.
Mr. Finglass.
Yes.
Ms. Liebman.
Yes.
Mr. Litt.
Yes.
Mr. Needleman.
Yes.
And Mr. Lopez and Mr. Klein are absent. The motion passes. Continue to September 8th.
Thank you very much. And I look forward to seeing you in a few months.
We look forward to seeing you. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Debbie, next.
The next application on the agenda is HPB file 391. This is an application for a certificate of appropriateness for the installation of a sign above the ground floor. Most people know this particular building as the Bojwani Tower. Several years ago, this property did come before the board for some exterior renovations. That work has been complete, and the property owner is currently leasing the space for tenants. It is an existing non-contributing building built in 1951 and designed by Albert Annis. The reason why it's non-contributing is because of the significant amount of alterations that have occurred over the years. So it's a unique situation in terms of this is the first time the board is seeing this type of application. The signage regulations were recently modified. Prior to this modification, business signage was not allowed above the ground floor without a variance. Now, the modifications do allow the Historic Preservation Board or Design Review Board to approve the design of signage above the ground floor. There are two options typically for above ground floor signage. One is a building identification sign, and one would be a business sign. So the existing property has already installed building identification signs, so they would not be permitted to install multiple building identification signs, and that would be at the parapet level. So they have filed an application requesting a certificate of appropriateness for the board to review the design of the sign. In evaluating this particular property, staff is not objecting. We have no concerns relative to impacts on the district or the existing building itself. We believe it's in scale with the parapet proportions. We're recommending approval. We've also noted that in this particular building, and we've included a photograph from 1965, which is really great, which shows that traditionally this building, and more particularly, the area of Washington Avenue around 17th Street, always had kind of larger signage than a lot of other areas of our historic districts. And we're recommending approval. No significant concerns whatsoever on this one. I see Matt Amster from the applicant is here. Matt, would you like to give the board a brief presentation?
Yes, and thanks, Debbie. Good morning, everyone. Matthew Amster with the law firm of Burkow, Riddell, Fernandez, Larkin, and Tapanez. Offices at 200 South Biscayne Boulevard in Miami. Here today representing Jimage Miami LLC. They are the tenant proposing to open a new gym on the second floor, the entire second floor of the Bajwani Tower. With me today, I have Carlos Anguidano Loma Osario. He's the president of Jimage Miami, as well as the founder of the Jimage concept, which is doing very well in Spain. We also have our sign specialist, Chris Harris from Miami Signs, and my colleague, Nicholas Rodriguez from our firm.
Matt, before you begin, I'd just like to swear in any members of your team who will be testifying. So can you state on the record whether you swear or affirm to tell the truth, whole truth, nothing but the truth?
I do, and I will be handling the presentation. If others do need to speak, you'll need to swear.
Okay, I'll do that before they speak. Okay, so you have 10 minutes. Thanks.
Thank you. So, as Debbie was relaying, you all saw the renovation in 2015 of the Bajwani Tower building, and that has been completed. And so this is an interior renovation, is already in permitting, just about ready to be approved for Jimage for the entire second floor. And we're here just to get their sign. And as Debbie mentioned, you know, the code has recently changed to allow a sign, it's of the same size that would otherwise be allowed on the ground floor, to be located above that ground floor. And by code, since we are the tenant for the entire second floor, we could have a sign up to 99 square feet, but they're only proposing a sign of 68 square feet. I'll take you through the plans in a minute. I just wanted to mention, you know, Jimage, despite our COVID-19 situation, they do hope to, when things get a little bit more normal, be able to provide what is a gym and wellness facility concept, basically an urban lifestyle resort that will be on the second floor. It's a natural fit for what is normally provided here in the beach. And their sign is also, I think, very respectful to the area. If I can, I want to share my screen to go through the plan. Give me 1 second. Okay. So this is showing you the location. Again, it's at the corner of Lincoln Road and Washington. Down here at the bottom, you can see the west facade, and the entire second floor will be our gymage location. And the sign here is over by the tower. And it's well away from the building identification sign, Bhajwani Tower. And again, this is the 68-square-foot sign. This is a site plan just to give you the identification of where the sign is located and compared to the location and size of the building. Again, an aerial for context. This is a daytime rendering of what it'll look like. You can see that there's the two parapet building identification signs in black, one on the west here, and then also one on the south. And here's our gymage sign. And then this is the view at night. The landlord signs will be lit up in the back. And similarly, so will the gymage sign. It's kind of an ice blue sign with LED backlighting. This is just giving you the idea of the total frontage to identify the location and the size of the sign allowed. The code actually has a maximum gives 100. We're at 99 as a max allowed based on the frontage, but we're only doing a 68-square-foot sign. And here's just some more particulars. So with that, we agree with all of staff's conditions and respectfully ask for your approval of locating the sign above the ground floor. Our team is available to answer any questions, and we would like to reserve any time for rebuttal should that be needed.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Amster. Debbie, I have a point of order question.
Sure.
I may be under false assumption here that it was the city's intention in that district on Lincoln Road, south of Washington Avenue, to help foster the neon restoration of the idea of neon signage down there to revive the historical look of the area. And if you look on page 7 of 7 of your information, you can see on that this building, the Cobb sign, the American Savings sign, the cheese, the something burger sign, and the building next door with a big G, everything on that street was in neon. I don't think that there's a particular reason for this backlighting. I don't think it is clear, and I don't think it reflects the history of that part of the street and that part of the district. And I would like to see neon brought back. And I thought that was something the city was trying to foster. Would you please comment on that?
Sure. So the Lincoln Road signage district was created to allow larger signs than what is allowed by code. So it also allows for moving signage, other types of blinking, flashing, and much larger signage than what would normally be approved under our current regulations. They are proposing a size of a sign that is allowable under the current regulations. Signage is something that is typically reviewed and approved administratively. If this was on the ground floor, this could be approved administratively. They're only here because they're shifting what is an allowable ground level sign, what could be an allowable in terms of the size, to the upper level floor. They are not requesting to take advantage of any special signage regulations, which again would allow for moving, blinking, intermittent, flashing type lights or a much larger size sign. If they were proposing to take advantage of that, then we would be requiring that they have that more animated type of signage. In this particular instance, staff did not have any concern whatsoever with the metal channel letters. Especially given the location of it, we thought it was relatively modest and consistent with the criteria.
But is it within board members' purview to to suggest another kind of lighting?
It is within your jurisdiction to recommend design changes to the proposed sign.
Okay, thank you. We've had the project presentation. Is there any public comment?
And Mr. Chair, before the public, do any board members have any ex parte communications to disclose on this application?
No.
Okay. Seeing none. Mr. Okay. McKinney, you're still under oath. You have 2 minutes.
Am I unmuted now? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Okay. David McKinney again for the Preservation League. The Advocacy Committee has reviewed the staff analysis in the application and has no opposition to the sign. But we do want to reiterate the chair's concern about their reviving the neon. We really think Lenny Bruce was wrong. The neon does not come to Miami to die. It comes to Miami to live forever. And we would hope that if this is indeed reviewed and design is altered, that the committee and the applicant would both take the chair's advice under consideration. But in terms of the advocacy's official vote on this, we support the staff recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, David, for your insightful comments. Any other public comment? Okay, hearing none, public comment is closed. Moving forward, Nancy.
Am I on?
Yes, hello? You are on beautifully. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I have no problem with this. I agree that the lighting is an important element in that area. And I'm glad to see that the people who own this property are going to enhance it.
Thank you, Nancy. Moving on, Scott.
Yes, I'm in favor of the project. Jack, you had an interesting point. And if the sign fronted on Lincoln Road, I'd probably go along with you. But because it is on it's on the Washington Avenue facade, I think I'm good with what they're proposing. But you did bring up a good point that I didn't think about. But other than that, I'm in favor of the project. The sign.
Are you sure it's on the Washington Avenue? I thought it was
It's on Washington, facing west.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
So
okay. Are you done, Scott?
Yeah, I'm done.
Thanks. Thanks so much. Kirk?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Pascal had to leave. There was a small emergency, so he has departed for the day. We only need 4 voting members for this application.
Okay, thank you. See who hasn't spoken. Nancy, Max, is Max? Max, did you speak?
I didn't. I don't have anything to add. I'm comfortable with staff recommendation. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Is there any final rebuttal from the project representative?
Yes. So, yeah, just make sure to clarify, this is the west facade, right? This is not fronting Lincoln. So the great picture in the staff report, which certainly shows the historic signage, both at the canopy level as well as up at the parapet, all very large, and I think some of it, yes, including neon, is what we feel is appropriate, certainly for the Lincoln Road-facing facade. The owner is putting forward this design for you today to brand their image. This is their first location, not only in Miami Beach, but in the entire United States. So that's an important step for them to bring this concept from Spain. And it also is respectful to and compatible with the existing signs, right? The Bhajwani Tower sign that's on the same facade as well as also on the south-facing facade. So with that, I mean, we do, I understand, you know, that we, this is a opportunity for them that they did consider, and this is the design that they think is the most appropriate for their business, for the building, and for the neighborhood. So we would respectfully request your approval of the sign as designed.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so we're going, any further board discussion? Okay, hearing none. We're going to go for a motion. Do I hear a motion for approval of the sign as submitted?
I'll move it.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Debbie, shall we have a vote?
Yes, I'll do the roll call. Mr. Needleman?
Yes.
Mr. Litt?
Yes.
Ms. Liebman?
Yes.
Mr. Finglass?
No.
Okay, that motion fails.
Wait, I thought you had to have...
How four, many votes? We need four affirmative votes.
And how many people are there?
We have four board members. Mr. Klein, Mr. Lopez, and Mr. Pascal are absent.
Oh, okay. Then I'll, can I change my vote?
Do we need a motion to reconsider from the prevailing side? So, Jack, you can make that motion to reconsider, and then we can have another vote.
Okay, correct. I move to reconsider the last vote.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Debbie, would you like to call the roll?
Yes, I will. Thank you, Nick. Mr. Needleman?
Yes.
Mr. Lopez is absent. Mr. Litt?
Yes.
Ms. Liebman?
Yes.
Mr. Finglass?
Yes.
Mr. Klein and Mr. Pascal are both absent. The motion passes to approve, subject to staff's conditions. Thank you.
I'm sorry. That was actually the motion to reconsider, so we need a motion to approve. Sorry.
Thank you, Nick. That is okay. So we have reopened the discussion, and now we would need another motion to approve.
I'll move it.
I'll second.
Okay. Mr. Needleman?
Yes.
Approve. Mr. Yes. Litt?
Yes.
Ms. Liebman?
Yes.
Mr. Finglass?
Yes.
Mr. Lopez, Mr. Pascal, and Mr. Klein are absent. The motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, next, Debbie.
The next application, this is the final application this morning, HPB file 20-0416. This is 940 Ocean Drive. An application has been filed requesting an after-the-fact certificate of appropriateness for the introduction of a glass wall system within the original public lobby. This is the Breakwater Hotel. It's a contributing building located on Ocean Drive. It is an after-the-fact. However, staff had gone out there to the site to look at some improvements that the restaurant tenant had been making. We did notice that there was the introduction of a glass storefront system separating the hotel lobby check-in portion of the public interior from the restaurant. So a restaurant has occupied a portion of the lobby, and we were advised at the time by the representative from the property owner that this glass system was introduced in order to create a buffer between the restaurant and the hotel check-in activities. While staff understands the desire for such a separation, we did advise the applicant at the time that we were not supportive of the storefront glass system that had actually been installed. We since had met with the applicant, had worked with the property owner and architect to develop a new glass storefront system that could be introduced that would have little to no impact on the public interior space. And that is what is currently presented in the plans that are before you. We should note, we do have one concern with regard to the existing terrazzo floor, and we have a condition that would require repair of that terrazzo floor if there's any damage during the installation process or the removal of the existing storefront, which we are not supportive of. So we are confident that that can be achieved. There is no patterning in this particular portion. We don't believe that the installation of the new storefront will be very impactful on the terrazzo, but we just wanted to point that out to the board so that you know we're not going to allow them to, whether it's to remove the existing one or install the new one, to have any damage done to that original material.
Okay, so thank you, Debbie. And before before we hear from the applicant, I'd like to swear in any members of the applicant's team who will be testifying. So can you state on the record whether you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Ari, can you unmute yourself? Where do you go?
The panelist?
Yes, he's the architect. He is, okay. Can you unmute yourself?
Yeah, how about now? Good?
We hear you.
Good.
I just need an I do.
I do, yes, I do.
Okay, thank you. You have 10 minutes.
I didn't just get married, did I? No.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Should I start the presentation?
Please do.
Thank you. Here today on behalf of 940 Ocean Drive, LLC, and with me is from Scholar Architecture, Ari Scholar, who did not get married. And I believe we need 5 votes, and we only have 4 members present.
Mr. Gonzalez, you need 4 votes. There's no demolition associated with this.
So this will be on a 4 vote? Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. I'm going to have Ari go through the presentation. And I understand that a glass partition was put in when Debbie, inspecting the hotel, the breakwater, noticed that there were concerns. The applicant agreed to remove it and replace it with something that would be glass and frameless, that would have minimal impact. And we have no issues with the conditions staff have put about making sure the terrazzo, if there is any damage, that it be restored and repaired either with removal or replacement. But I'll have, I'll ask Ari, we can put up the presentation, and Ari can walk you through the presentation at this point.
Hi, can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, good. Good morning, everybody. Glad to be together on Zoom here. And so we have before you the wonderful Breakwater Hotel. We're actually not doing anything to the exterior. We are only improving the interior by replacing a bulky, heavy interior storefront with a frameless glass, more historic type glass separation, frameless, only mounted at the top and the bottom, which matches many of the historical installations in the past from storefronts. Systems in similar type of buildings. So on our cover page, we have a variety of different pictures on the history of the breakwater, how it's looked at different times. If you can go to the next slide. And you see, this is the whole ground floor plan. Highlighted in red is the only area that we are focusing on. To the top, to the north, is a small area that is used as the hotel reception lobby. And to the bottom of that red area is the hotel restaurant with direct access to Ocean Drive. And the highlighted area indicates where there is a storefront separating the hotel lobby reception from the restaurant. If you can go to the next slide, please. These are some of the photos of the lobby. area. And on the bottom left, you can see the storefront doors that were installed. They are presently automatic doors and with a heavy, bulky aluminum storefront frame. And if you can go to the and there's a variety of other photos there of the lobby area and the restaurant area, and obviously the front entrance of the breakwater. If you can go to the next slide. So in the center, you'll see here a picture of a similar type frameless storefront door that we're proposing to be installed in the same location. On the left is an existing floor plan. On the top left is the existing floor plan. On the bottom right is the proposed floor plan with the new doors, the swing doors. The top center is the existing elevation. The bottom center is the proposed elevation. And again, basically, it's going to be like the photo in the center, which is down the street at another of the historic hotels, which basically lets you see directly through, but separating the noise and the functions. And regarding the concern, if you look at the bottom right, we do show a blow up of the terrazzo and how the door is attached. And I think if you can go to the next slide, we have details of the door and at the sill. So I've contacted Dr. Marble, which is a very high end. Now they're called Exclusive Surfaces as well. They've done many, many terrazzo renovations and restorations in the historic district. And they came out to look at the project, and they have no concern that they can carefully remove the existing door and patch whatever is needed. They feel very confident that they can take the screws out directly up with limited damage, and that they can reinstall the new door with limited amount of screws and make a successful installation, again, with little to no damage, and it will be repaired almost like new. Let me see, next slide, if we have one. Do we have another slide, or is that the final slide?
No, that's the last slide, Ari. That's
okay.
The last one.
So these are the details for the frameless storefront and the type of handles, vertical poles. It's all going to be clear, butt glass, no vertical frames. And I believe that on the cover page or on another page, we do have specific notes indicating that the contractor shall hire a terrazzo contractor to have all details reviewed and approved by us and by staff prior to removal and reinstallation, removal of the existing door and reinstallation of the new door. And with that, we look for your favorable approval. We're willing to accept staff's recommendation and conditions.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ari. That was most enlightening. We appreciate it immensely. Thank you. Is there any, Debbie, do?
Mr. Chair, David McKinney would like to speak from the public.
I'm sorry, before we open to Mr. McKinney, do any board members have any disclosures on this file? Okay. David, you are still under oath. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you. The Preservation League fully supports the staff recommendation. We just want to reiterate that the restoration of the terrazzo floor and its preservation to the construction project is paramount, and that this should be considered there as a requirement for approving the recommendation of the application. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David, for your great comment. It's most appreciated. Is there any other public comment?
I don't see any at this time, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we go to board comments. First, Nancy.
I have no problem with this. I think Ari has done a fine job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Max?
Nothing to add. I'm supportive as well. Thank you.
Scott?
I'm in support of the project.
Jack, I'm in support of the project.
Thank you.
Alfredo, that's a major event. Moving right along. Let's see. Should we take a motion for a vote?
Please. Yeah.
Who would like to make the motion?
I'll make a motion that we approve the application with all the staff's conditions.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, thank you, Max. All those in favor?
We'll take a roll call vote. Mr. Chair, Mr. Finglas?
Yes.
Ms. Liebman?
Yes.
Mr. Litt?
Yes.
Mr. Needleman?
Yes.
Mr. Pascal, Mr. Lopez, and Mr. Klein are absent. The motion passes. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. And everyone stay safe during whatever comes our way this weekend.
Thank you.
Alfred. Yes, thank you. And I would like to commend Debbie on an amazing agenda. I can't believe that the times listed on the agenda and the whole board stuck to within 10 to 15 minutes of what was scheduled. I'm very impressed. I'm on another board in another city, and it's amazing that this was so close to time.
Well, we're not done yet.
Okay, it's very, very good, though.
Debbie, I have five items for new business I'd like to bring up. If that's
okay, I would like to update the board on two items as well, Mr. Chair. If I could just, because I do have updates for you on previous discussions. The first is the International Inn. I know a lot of the board members recall that last year you did recommend in favor of the historic designation. You reviewed the historic designation report. The next step in that designation process was to be heard by the planning board. You've been involved in discussions between the property owner, their representatives, and the city. You've been updated as to what was happening with a development agreement, specifically dealing with the non-conforming use of the existing hotel. That item... just to talk about the development agreement and potential zoning changes, was heard by the city commission and was supported by the city commission. So although that's completely separate and would not necessarily be going back to the Historic Preservation Board in terms of the ordinance amendments, the historic designation will be now moving forward. The timeline we have as a tentative timeline now is a planning board hearing for the historic designation in December. So the planning board's meeting date is December 15th. And we currently anticipate that moving forward in on that date. After the planning board's recommendation, then the designation would be moved to the city commission. City Commission would review the designation at two readings. So we anticipate the first reading in January of 2021 and the final adoption of the historic site February of 2021. The designation itself will not be coming back to you because you have already reviewed it and supported it. So I thought that was really important to update the board on. That is moving forward. I know it's taken quite some time, but everyone's been working hard, including the property owner, and we think that it's going to be a very positive outcome. The second item I wanted to provide you with an update on is something I had emailed you about several weeks ago. This is 2814 Collins Avenue. This is with regard to an unsafe structures violation and subsequent emergency demolition order. The demolition order was issued by Miami-Dade County a few years, I think it was maybe 2 years ago. The city has been trying to compel the property owner to restore and repair the building to cure the violations, the unsafe structures violations. That has been a challenging process for the building official. However, most recently, the building department did meet with the owners. There does appear to be some movement. They were given a deadline of the 27th, which was just a few days ago, to submit repair plans. That deadline was subsequently extended to the end of this week because the applicant was having some issues obtaining a right-of-way permit. But it does look positive that they will be getting that right-of-way permit in order to install the necessary equipment needed to shore and start the concrete repair of the building. So that was the update on that. We're hopeful that that building can be saved. In the event it is not able to be saved and the order is issued final to be demolished, then that would be an after-the-fact demolition scenario for the property owner. The property owner would then be required to submit an after-the-fact certificate of appropriateness for demolition. And at that time, it would be presumed that the board would issue an order that would not allow any new construction on this, that site to exceed the height and FAR of the existing building. This particular building, you know, we're hopeful it can be saved. In the event it is not, staff has gathered a significant amount of historical documentation on the building. So we think that's, you know, good news if we do face a worst case scenario, that we do have good photographic documentation of the building, how it was originally. So those are the two updates I wanted to provide the board. I'm happy to answer any questions or bring back any additional information you may need at the next meeting.
Thank you very much, Debbie. Does any board member have a comment or question?
Hey, Nancy, I think you need to unmute. I see you.
I did.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm just concerned about, if Debbie, you could tell us which of the projects that were listed that we didn't hear. What are we to save as far as the volumes that we have here? I counted four.
Okay, for this agenda, which is the abridged agenda from the 14th, you would save the 1, 2, 3, 4 Washington Avenue, the 550 Washington Avenue. You could save the Versace Mansion property, the 1116 Ocean Drive, but I don't think it's 100% necessary because you did give direction for the applicant to come back with design alternatives, so they would be submitting new plans to you. From this agenda, that's the only one. Now, the previous meeting, the board had continued several applications to the August meeting. So I don't have that information right in front of me here, but the Raleigh Hotel was one. There were several from the July meeting that will be heard in August.
The Sanctuary?
The Sanctuary was approved July 14th, so that you can toss.
Yes, okay. And wait, the theater.
That is 550 Washington Avenue. That you would want to save because that will be coming back in August.
Okay, so what? Okay, that's good. Sanctuary.
I believe the Generator Hotel.
Sanctuary was approved. The Max, the generator was continued. We anticipate new plans being submitted. So if you want to save the old ones for reference, please go ahead and do so. But we do anticipate also sending the board an updated set of plans for that.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Debbie. I don't want to take too much more time, but these are five extremely important things, projects that we've not heard any comment on for some time. And since we do have a little time now, I'd very much like to give you all the list. And so you can think about the ones that you have concerns about to add to the conversation that we're going to have with Debbie about their status. The first is our old friend, the Deauville Hotel. The second is the Log Cabin and West Lots. The third is, I'm not sure the address, but I think it's 2600 North Bay Road. The next is the hotel sign on 69th and Collins, the neon sign that was removed during the renovation and has not been put back. And the last is the former Doral Hotel status. Can you, Debbie, please address any of these you can?
Sure. I can address the neon sign at 6901. That's the Golden Sand signage, 6901 Collins. I have been in communication with the condo association attorney. They have advised me that the developer had removed the sign prior to it being turned over to the condo. There is a violation that was issued. So they currently have, and this was issued again to the condo association because the violation was issued after the developer turned it over to them. So I've been in communication with them. I've advised them that the sign should be reintroduced or an application to the Historic Preservation Board will be required not to reintroduce the sign. They advised me that they were working with the developer on a series of other issues that they had with the development. And this was going to be added to that list. Now, I reached out to them as recently as I would say maybe 2 months ago. I have not heard back. So I will do my best to reach out and try and get you an update for a future meeting. But just so the board is aware, there is an active violation. That violation will not be taken away until they, number one, reintroduce the sign or get approval from this board not to reintroduce the sign. So I will continue to reach out to the association to try and have that sign put back or have them submit an application.
Thank you very much. What about the Deauville?
The city is currently in litigation with the Deauville, so I don't know the extent of what we should be speaking about today. I know the planning director of the city attorney's office, myself, have been in communication with the owners of the Deauville. We are obviously anticipating some action, whether it is between the owners and the city or at a court hearing. But at this point, I don't have any significant updates for you other than the fact that we have been in communication. The property owners have hired an architect, which is, you know, very good news. So, you know, we've been talking with the architect on different potential options. Nick, do you have anything to add?
I don't have anything to add on the litigation front. I've asked my colleague for an update. And so if I can provide that before the end of the meeting, I will. But if not, I can update the board at the board's meeting in August.
And I just wanted to note that we are currently in a a mitigation. We are trying to work with our city attorneys and the property owners to come to a resolution, but that hasn't been determined yet. So we are in communication with them, which is you know, a positive sign.
Super. Thank you so much.
The log cabin Mr. Chair. I know I can update you with regard to that is approved as a tranche two geo bond project. We're currently in tranche one now in terms of the construction projects that is moving, you know, even with the current situation in COVID and the delay in a lot of projects, the geo bond projects are on schedule. So we do not anticipate any significant delays with any of the projects. And I can confirm that it is currently in tranche two. So that would be the second round of geo bond projects that the city would be undertaking.
As far as you know, is the city actually taking care of the wooden members, or are they going to be conveniently lost?
I don't have any specific information on that. I know they were stored, and I believe they still are. I haven't heard anything to the contrary.
Okay. I just don't want us to take our eyes off that project. Because it means a lot to Kirk and many people in North Beach.
Absolutely.
The next one is a real problem for me. The North Bay Road house that we have, it's a certified structure. We approved its demolition and its reconstruction. And I drive by there almost every few days and nothing has happened. It's in terrible condition. I'm amazed the neighbors aren't picketing, frankly, the city to do something. And I think it's an outrage that we can approve a reconstruction. It's a certified building and the city takes absolutely no action at all.
Mr. Chair, I don't have any specific information. I know a building permit was issued in accordance with the plans that was approved by the board. I think that's 2740. I don't have 20. I think you said 2600 North Bay Road. I don't.
I was wrong. You're right.
Okay. I can look into that. I remember months ago, maybe close to a year ago, there was a building permit for the revised design approved by this board issued. So I can reach out to the owner and get an update on that for a future meeting.
Please do. Thank you. And the last one is something dear to my heart because I've had many fun events in this building. And we spent an awful lot of time on the Starlight Room at the Doral Hotel. And it's been closed like now for years. I don't understand why it's closed. They were doing such great work there, and they're so cooperative, and it's such an important building. We need to know what's going on there.
At this time, I don't have any information, but I will look into it and be able to update you at a future meeting.
Okay, thank you. Does any board member, Nancy?
I just have to ask Debbie. I have 7835 Harding. Is that in September, or what happened with that? Because I have that.
That was continued to September. However, they will be providing new plans because the board asked for some significant revisions to the design. So I anticipate additional plans being delivered to you at that time.
Good. Thank you, Nancy, for that good comment. Does any other board member have anything to add? There's so many things that are kind of sitting at this point due to COVID and the economy. I realize that, but we really need to keep our finger on the pulse to make sure it doesn't die.
The log cabin for a second. Just wanted to confirm, because I used to sit as a non-voting member on the Geo Bond Oversight Committee, and I thought the log cabin was rejected from tranche two by the oversight board, but I didn't retain my notes after that. So I just want to double check on that.
Max, that's interesting. I don't know. So I will need to reach out to,
I think Maria would know.
Staff, Maria Hernandez or Thais, yeah. and give you guys an update at a future meeting. Do you recall approximately when that was, you believe that was, that vote was taken?
Early 2019, maybe February.
Okay, I will definitely look into that and provide an update to the board as to where what tranche the log cabin is currently anticipated for.
Okay. Yeah, the GeoBond Committee has thoughts on that. I just want to make sure we're operating on the same information there.
Absolutely. Thank you for that clarification.
One more thing, Debbie. I have no idea whether this is in our purview or not, but driving around to grocery stores and doctors and things, I see lots of signs that say "Save the West Lots." Is that something that we should, or that comes under our purview, or that's not? We have nothing.
It's not located. The West Lots are not located within any local historic district, so it's not under this board's jurisdiction. You are an advisory body to other city boards as well as the city commission. So, you know, you can discuss what's happening there. I don't have any information with regard to that, but it's not within your voting jurisdiction, but you're welcome to make a recommendation.
Whenever I see a sign that says save something, my ears perk up immediately. So that I thought it might be of concern. Does any other board member have anything to add to discussion? We have little time. Nancy, do you have anything you want to tell us?
Didn't I talk enough today?
No, you no. didn't. We want more.
No, I was very happy with most of the projects.
Okay.
Did express.
Okay, thank you. Hearing no more discussion items, Debbie?
I didn't have.
Oh, Max, sorry.
Yeah, I had one item that I'm a little bit conflicted, and since we have a smaller audience for board discussion, but given that we have time now and haven't had time before, wanted to bring up, if it's okay with you, about historic preservation and equity. So just wanted to bring this up in light of the ongoing protests and for racial justice and equity, and considering Historic Preservation Board's relationship to the past, whether we would have something to say or if there was an action that we could take here. And given, you know, the way that we work to protect and celebrate the assets from our past that make a beautiful and vibrant community for today and into the future. Sort of working along that tack, making sure that also that we're correcting any historical patterns of racial segregation or bias in our systems, regardless of whether those policies or practices were intentional. So building off of, in thinking about the protests for equity and justice that are triggered by the killings of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, Tony McDade, and too many others to name. While most of the conversation is more broadly focused on, is focused on policing and criminal justice, I thought maybe the Historic Preservation Board, there might be something that, within our purview discuss.
You need to mute. Yeah, there you go. Okay.
Yeah. That we could discuss sort of addressing underlying inequality within housing or planning policy. And I had a proposed motion, but I'm interested to hear from the board members too, from what type of motion, or if there was something that we could do from our position that's consistent with the mission of the Historic Preservation Board to call on the city to address inequitable patterns or practices from the past, to bring us in line with our aspirational values.
Okay. Debbie, would you please address that?
Well, I think that's, that's really as a Historic Preservation Board, you are an advisory board, very similar to the West Lots. If you wanted to issue a recommendation, Max was rather general, but there are, aspects of zoning and city planning that dovetail into social equity issues. Housing would be one of them. There's a lot of recommendations that could come out of this. Now, this board does not have authority to change any of the land development regulations, but you certainly could discuss aspects of our regulations and make recommendations to whether it would be to the planning board, to the city commission, to the state of Florida. You're welcome to discuss it. If you want, city staff can bring back a resolution that we could transmit, you know, to any of the bodies that you would want to address your comments to.
Okay, thank you.
Scott? Yeah, I was just going to say, Max, you know, this board, we get into a lot of issues, I mean, all centered around historic preservation. I know, you know, what you're saying, and I don't know, to kind of delve into that is just kind of opening up a whole new door and direction we may want to go. However, if you have something specific from the historic preservation ordinance that may sort of highlight something you're talking about, yeah, I think obviously we can talk about it, but to sort of just come out with like a general type resolution or comment, I don't know if we want to go that way. Now, what you're saying, I just thought of something which is kind of interesting. You know, we haven't run it, at least in my time on the board, we haven't run into this, but, you know, in terms, let's talk about signage. We're always, you know, we're usually for historic signage and everything. And, you know, some of the, you know, Miami Beach has a history going back that people were excluded. So it's interesting if, you know, someone was doing work on a building and there was sort of a prominent sign that said no Jews allowed, no blacks, something like that. I mean, what's this board going to do? Are we going to say we want to see that sign but get put back? So, you know, I as long as, you know, in my time on the board, we haven't had any issues like that. But if there is, again, something specific in the ordinance that you see needs discussion, yeah, I think we can discuss it. But as far as just making a generalization about, you know, some of the issues going on today, I don't think we should kind of go in that direction.
You know, Scott, that is very, you just made me think of something which I think is really fascinating. We have a sign in a historic hotel, and it's a architecturally significant sign, so it's part of the history, the original history and design of the building. The building is named after, I believe it's a British, some British royalty. And apparently, I was just contacted by an ownership group who's looking to purchase the hotel that is Palestinian, and I was unaware of this British. The member of this British royalty at the time, the atrocities that had occurred to the Palestinian people on his rule, basically. So that is something that I think I was completely unaware of it. And obviously, you know, when we're dealing with the historic element of the building, that's something that, you know, I advise people very carefully on and requires board review. But those types of issues, I think you're going to be seeing more and more as people become a lot more sensitive to things like signs and names. And, you know, it's really kind of eye-opening and enlightening to start looking at how we may be offending actually quite large groups of people by things that we would not even ever, you know, see. You know, I didn't know the history with this particular person. And, you know, once you start educating yourself and learning about it, there may be ways in which the board does want to be more flexible and more sensitive, you know, to cultural groups that aren't normally represented. So I think going forward, these types of things, probably you'll be hearing more about, even with historic preservation board applications. You know, that seems completely separate. It really does overlap in terms of a lot of these cultural concerns.
I think it's, you know, I understand what you're saying, but I think it's dangerous, tricky to, we have to be careful if we want to go that direction, because I can promise you, if you look really deep into any of the people that have built some of these buildings that we celebrate today, we can find a lot of fault with the builders, with the developers. I'm sure if we looked at the names of a lot of these buildings, we can find issues with the names. I'm sure if we really looked into it and we looked at maybe some architectural details on them, we may be able to find where that's a symbol of some kind of racist past or something like that. I mean, you know, I just think we need to be careful if we want to go down that road. It's just, it can open up a lot of issues down the line where it's, I mean, we see what's happening in the world and, you know, it's just, it seems like it's never ending. All I can tell you is, like I said, we could probably find fault with the builders of every one of our historic buildings, because unfortunately back in the day, that's a lot of people had certain thoughts. So it's just something we need to be careful of going forward.
Thank you, Scott. Anybody else have a comment? Nancy? Unmute yourself, Nancy, please. Nancy, we can't hear you.
Okay, right?
Right.
Okay. Those of us who have lived here forever, it feels, there was a lot of segregation going on in this community, but it was not particularly a segregation against, well, yes, it was Blacks. Blacks had to have a pass to come on this to Miami Beach, and they couldn't be here at night. The musicians at the time, the Black musicians who we all probably know names of, they were never allowed to perform here. So Miami Beach has its good share of this problem. I don't know how we would bring it up where it would be an effective and positive discussion. I don't know, but it's very interesting. I think that we should think about it and maybe, well, Scott, you've been here forever. Were you born here?
Born and raised, yeah.
Right. So you know what I'm talking about. I don't know how old you are if you go back that far, but it,
maybe
it
not
was
that
there.
Far, but
there. Not that far back? Oh. Anyway, I think that we should continue it in some way, and all of us think about bringing their thoughts about it. We don't know about the other three. I do know I had a problem. We came here in 1959, and though it wasn't with Miami Beach, it was with the city of Miami. I was looking for a teaching job. We had just arrived, and I went to a private school in Miami. And when they heard I was Jewish, that was the end of the conversation and the end of, and they just told me, we don't hire your kind. So that was the one thing that I can remember in this. And when my husband, at the same time, was interning at Jackson Memorial Hospital, that was a totally segregated place. When you went to the hospital, you could only go to the white part of the hospital. There was a Black part of the hospital, and the nurses there had to tell everybody that when the telephone rang, they'd pick up the telephone and say, Black one, Black two. That was this kind of, it was totally segregated here. This was a Southern place for many years. So if we want to pursue it, I think going back into that history, but then I don't know how you bring it forward as a current issue to discuss. Maybe Max can kind of help us with that since it was his idea.
Thanks, Nancy and Scott and Debbie. It's to that point of, you know, how to make this something, you know, actionable and productive.
The thought that I had would be a motion by the board urging the mayor and commission to undertake a review of our city planning practices to have an independent assessment of whether the historic preservation or planning policies that are in place today are perpetuating any disparate racial outcomes or that was kind of where my head was with this, but I think that's just one example. Maybe this board could think about like a discrete step to take to not that we would solve anything overnight, but to sort of bring that commitment into practice in a tangible way. In this case, through a review, but I think others might have ideas as well.
Okay, I think.
Or if that sounds like a good start, you know, if that was a motion that we would take up.
I'm wondering if the city, you know, with everything that's been going on, if the city has kind of decided to look inwards and see if any of their policies, not only planning wise, but in any department, maybe they have kind of started this. I think before we take a motion, maybe we should find out if the city already is doing anything along those lines. And then go forward, because I'm sure they've talked about, you know, nobody's really, I don't want to say nobody, but it's harder to kind of catch all the commission meetings now. But maybe they've talked about it. Maybe they said, well, yeah, let's look at some of our policies. I think in terms of policing, I think they may have, but as far as other, you know, planning or economic development or any of the other departments, I don't know if they have, but maybe we should find out first.
That sounds logical. Yeah.
Max, the other thing I would add is that I know that in some other jurisdictions, like for instance in the county, that before legislative actions are taken, that that county staff is required to undertake to provide like a social equity statement of whatever impact the legislation might have. So, what I was thinking is if there are specific legislative changes that you have in mind. That, you know, that I'd be happy to work with you if you identify something that you think would be interesting for the board to take up. I'd be happy to look at whatever research you find and help identify, you know, where that could fit in to our codes here. But I think, you know, if you see today as sort of a starting point for the discussion, you know, the board could either take up your motion today, or you could continue this discussion maybe to a subsequent meeting, and then if there are specific like legislative changes or more specific direction you'd like the board to take, I can help work with you before the meeting to shape those recommendations.
Okay.
That would be a very good idea.
Thank you.
Anybody else would like to speak?
Yeah.
Nancy? Did you say yes?
Did you hear me?
No, I didn't.
Okay. No, I'd like to add something. Now, I haven't thought about all this for a long time. Now, you started something. Let me see, must have been about 20 years ago. There was a big issue about the fact that the population of people on boards were all, I guess they called us white Americans. And it was an organized protest that there be... that they divide the city into five districts so that at that time, the Cuban Americans who had just come and they were prevalent here, so that they would have an opportunity to get on a board. And we went through all of that. The issue never passed. It was a 4-3 vote, no matter when it happened. And interestingly, the boards were integrated, not because of the lawmaking, but integrated because the people just realized that if they put in some effort and they applied to boards and they did it, and we know now that we have quite a diverse population in this community in Dade County. So I don't know if that's something we would go back and address or think about, because in Miami Beach itself, it's not that diverse.
Thank you, Nancy. Max, do you have anything else at this time?
No, not at this time. Just, I guess the follow-up would be if Debbie or Nick, if there's anything that you can inform us, you know, that's happening above the level that would change how we might take this up as a board.
Yeah. Sure,
and
Max.
Would you like the? Oh, I'm sorry, Debbie. Go ahead.
It's okay. We can you know, continue this for a future meeting. I'm not sure when the next meeting is going to be where we'll have this luxury of having some additional time. But we have, you know, Jack has provided me with some discussion items I will get back to the board on. We can definitely do some research to see. I know the city is looking at a lot of diversity issues and strategies right now. So we can definitely bring that back when we have time for discussion items. So we will keep that in the list of active discussion items. And speak to it when the next time we have some available time.
Sounds great to me, Debbie. Thank you. Okay, is there any other new business to talk about or think about? Okay, hearing none. Do we hear a motion for adjournment?
Move.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Bye. Bye-bye.
Opposed. Thank you, everyone. See you August 11th.
Okay.
Thanks, all.